Round one. Fight.
This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is the Aftershock Central Podcast. I almost said Valiant Central.
Don't do that, man.
Aftershock Central Podcast.
Aftershock fans already know freaking Valiant.
That's not true.
What the crap is Valiant?
That's not true. They do. I've seen it. Anyways, that's the Shuck Center Podcast. I'm Martin. Jack's here, and Ronnie is MIA. I don't know. I just don't get it. What's with you guys?
I told you it's a two-man podcast. We got to bench somebody every week. Ronnie was underperforming the last couple weeks, so I step in, and then if I'm not up to par, bring in the next guy.
Mm.
Right?
I guess. It's a good thing there's three of us, so we'd be screwed.
Yeah.
We've got a big episode. There's three books. I don't think there's been three books in one week in quite a while.
Right.
It's great. Black Eyed Kids is back. And there's not one, but two Animosity books. What?
And World Reader. So four.
Oh, man, I didn't read that.
You didn't read World Reader?
Nope.
We still got to talk about it.
Okay, you can talk about it.
Well, we just did.
Wait, did that come out? Why don't I have it?
Ronnie sent it to us, man.
I missed that.
Who's slacking now?
I missed that. Well, you know, like the schedule on the website isn't always up to snuff. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep. You're passing blame to somebody else.
I blame Ronnie. I blame Ronnie. Anyways. Fine, there's four books. I will talk about three. Jack can talk about the fourth one. Oh, man. We're going to kick off with Black Eyed Kids, because that's been on hiatus for a little bit.
Yeah.
Been missing it a little bit, and now it's back.
Yep.
The question is, did the hiatus hurt the book or help the book? Dun, dun, dun.
Well, a lot's happened since the last issue, like in the way, meaning a lot of really strong books have came out.
That's true.
So it's a whole different ball game than the last few times we were talking about Black Eyed Kids.
You're right about that. Yeah, dude, like the latest crop of books have been freaking awesome.
Yeah, it's been really impressive.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get on it. Black Eyed Kids, it's Joe Pruitt on writing, Simon Kudrowski on art, Guy Major in colors, Martian Dillon on letters. And even though we've had a hiatus, it doesn't mean the story took a pause.
No.
Because it picks right up from what happened in issue 12.
Mm-hmm.
So Meredith and Gus head to the hospital because Gus has been, he got beat up pretty bad, it looks like. And as we find out, Ricky, the black-eyed kid that we met in the first issue that robbed the convenience store, he came upon Gus and Meredith and stabbed the hell out of Gus, man.
Mm-hmm.
He was ready to kill him. So I guess we can assume from the previous issue that they escaped the master and all the black-eyed kids. And, of course, now they're after Gus.
Yep.
Gus gives Meredith this mysterious phone and says to call him. And Meredith's like, who? Who are we calling? And I was thinking the same thing. Who are we calling, Jack?
Yeah.
Because we get a new character gets introduced here.
Is he new?
Well, he's new.
He's been introduced before, though, right? He looks familiar.
He looks familiar, but we didn't know his name.
Yeah.
He's the guy. Wasn't he the guy that had the website? The Black Eyed Kids website?
Okay, right. Way back in first few issues.
Yeah, in the first arc.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we get introduced to him. And we see the whole backstory of how Gus ended up being taken to the hospital by Meredith.
Mm-hmm.
As she calls this mysterious man. So they try to escape, and Ricky knocks Gus down and starts stabbing him.
Well, hold on. You're not going to mention his mysterious visitor he had while in the hospital? Or are you getting to that?
We can get to that. Because right. That pops up kind of towards the end, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Yep. So Ricky stabbing Gus, Meredith grows some balls, and...
She did, man, in this issue.
Yeah, she knocks Ricky out, she shanks him.
Yeah, she's getting confident.
Yeah, finally, right? She's been kind of a maiden in distress the whole time.
Right.
And now she's finally realizing she needs to do something or she's going to get killed. Serious business. Let me tell you, she does a number on Ricky, man.
Yeah.
Like that panel where he's laying on the ground, I don't know what's happening, but like the ground is all cracked and there's like, I don't know, all kinds of junk flying off of him. And I know they haven't explained yet what it is that has taken over these people. But it's like this black goo tentacles just pouring out of Ricky.
Which panel are you talking about?
What page is this? I don't know what page this is. I'm looking at a digital copy. It's right after she knocks him in, over the back of the head with a stick.
Oh, right.
And he's like, bitch, I'm going to take my time and cut you up, and bam.
Yeah, it's like if they bleed, it looks black. But I don't know if that's just the way the artist is rendering their blood or if it's really supposed to be some black goo.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to assume black goo.
Okay.
I like the black goo.
The black goo theory.
The black goo theory. It's kind of like the alien tentacles from Rough Riders.
Yeah.
Anyways, he gets knocked down. So this is most of the issue is a flashback sequence, right?
Right.
We see Meredith taking Gus to the hospital. He's like, leave me alone. And she's like, no, I'm going to save you, blah, blah, blah. And she calls the mysterious person because it's the only number in the phone. And it says, call me. Convenient.
Yep.
And he automatically knows where she's at. So she goes to he goes to pick her up. Now you had some issue with this next sequence.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not a problem with the story. It's just sort of me nitpicking, like a little bit of a pet peeve. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand. I just can't imagine a scenario where a real person would walk through a mysterious building knowing they're by themselves, or if they're not by themselves, they're in a situation where they don't want to be discovered, and just be constantly talking out loud and like whatever's going through your head, just saying it out loud. So it feels like these should have been rendered as like thought bubbles. Like she should be walking around the halls thinking things, not saying things out loud.
So I get your point, but the way I understood this is she's going through this hospital, trying to see like – because she goes through the crime scene. What was it? The second arc, right?
Yeah.
She goes to this crime scene and she's like, oh, it's like I'm on the set of Walking or Halloween 2, this and that. Like she sees the chalk lines on the ground from the dead bodies and all that. And she's narrating everything that she sees. And I almost feel like she's kind of like a skittish person.
Like and nervous.
So, yeah.
Nervous chatter.
Yep. And so she's talking herself into understanding what happened. While at the same time trying to comfort herself that she's in this place by herself. You know what I mean?
I guess. I mean, I guess that's a way to, like, rationalize it.
it makes sense to me. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't care. It doesn't, like, make me like or dislike the story more. It's just when I'm reading it, it just seems weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I wouldn't – there's no way – I mean I'd be tiptoeing through there as quietly as I could be if it was me. But
sure,
whatever.
Sure. As she's going through the hospital, she comes upon Ricky. And, of course, he can't go in there until he's invited. And she's like, well, you know what? Screw this. I'm done being tired. She's like, Ricky, come on down. Come and get me.
Yeah.
and she starts running up the stairs. And he's like, you've got to be the stupidest bitch alive, chases after her. And, I mean, really, like, she's grown quite a bit because, again, she beats the crap out of him.
Yeah, she does.
She throws. Do they have something against water? Have we seen that before? I don't remember that.
No, she.
She throws a bucket of water at him.
Right.
And he's like, "I'm melting."
No. He doesn't say I'm melting.
He should have.
He's not the Wicked Witch of the West.
No, he should have. Yeah, he's like, "What the hell? Are you kidding me? How old are you?"
Right. Like she's just playing a prank on him.
Oh, never mind. Now that I reread this, I understand it. So she throws water at him because she ends up shocking him with the resuscitation pads, whatever they're called.
Yeah. Right.
That's why she throws the water at him. And that knocks him out. And then she remembers what Gus told her. Number one, they don't do well with electricity. Number two, you got to cut the eyeballs out.
Yep.
So as she gets picked up, she shows the guy, what was his name? Reese. She shows Reese that she's got Ricky's eyeballs in her hand. She's like, yeah, I'm going to be just fine.
Right.
So that's interesting. Much, much different character than what we saw a few issues ago.
Right.
And then we get to the kind of sad part of the issue. Because you've got Gus laying in the hospital bed, and his daughter shows up, Michelle, who's a black-eyed kid. And if you remember from the previous issue, or it might have been 2 issues ago, the Master promises Gus that if he joins them, that he will let his daughter go and they can be a family again.
Right.
And so she recaps that whole thing. She's like, I can't believe you chose Meredith over me. Like, you know, the Master made you this offer and you just threw it away. We could have been a family again, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, no. He's like, we couldn't have been. He's like, I know it was all a lie. And of course, he's talking about the promise. Because he knows that there's no way the Master is going to free her and let them be a family again. So...
And she confirms that.
She's like, you're right. He would never have allowed that, nor would I have wanted it. So she's just full on black-eyed kid. Your daughter's dead. She died a horrible death so that I could be reborn. And I'm assuming, spoiler alert, that she kills him.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess. They don't say for sure, but it kind of looks that way.
Right, they don't say for sure, but she chokes him.
She does, yeah, she chokes him.
As she's telling him what she's become. Michelle's dead, and now so are you. And she walks off. But I wasn't quite sure of that, because when she's walking away, she looks back, and it almost looks like her eyes are normal again. And I don't know if it's just the way that it's drawn, maybe?
Well, there's a white, but something white in her eye. Right?
Yeah.
And it's like either it's showing her eye or I was wondering, is it a tear?
Oh, maybe it is a tear. You're right.
But it's hard to tell.
Yep, you're right. It could be a tear.
Because in the image right before it, it looks like she's topless.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that has anything to do with the story, but I'm just saying the way it's drawn, it's hard to tell what things are sometimes. Doesn't it look like she's completely topless with like bracelets on or something?
Yep.
Anyways, that's not what this podcast is about.
That's for the After Dark segment, Jack.
Right. Okay, overtime.
Oh, man. So, interesting issue.
Yeah.
Like all the other issues. It just goes by so quick, man.
Hold on a second. What is the deal with that?
With what?
I guess it's just a mistake or something, what I just said, because I thought that. I didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to it, though. But now, she has a black shirt on. Why in that picture on the left does she look like she has no shirt on?
Yeah, well, you know, could have been a coloring error. I don't know. Maybe it's the light. I don't know.
Does the light make a black shirt look see-through?
I mean, does the light make a blue shirt look gold?
Dude, somebody forgot the color in that shirt, or they just did that for kicks. You see what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Okay.
I see what you're saying.
Whatever.
I mean, she's definitely wearing a shirt. You can see the line where it cuts off at the wrists.
Yeah.
We'll blame that on the swag.
Yeah. Yep.
Shame on you, Rob.
Now look at the preview for 14. Who's that girl? Is that Meredith?
I assumed it was Meredith.
Yeah. She's got black eyes if it is.
Yep.
That should be it. Meredith.
It could be, what was the girl's name? Riley? The daughter from the original,
right.
The first family.
Oh, does she get turned?
I don't remember seeing her get turned, but I mean, her brother's a black-eyed kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the covers don't always
represent
what's inside.
Right.
You know?
But this is some little girl we don't know who it is.
Possibly.
So it makes me think it's Meredith or somebody.
Possibly. I don't want to speculate.
Well, let's see what was on the cover of this one. Oh, I have no idea who that kid is. So never mind. This one has some random kid on the front cover also, so.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that could be the master. I don't know. It is a kind of random kid.
It's got long hair.
It looks like a woman.
Is it a woman? I don't know. It looks like a dude to me.
Anyways, let's rate Black Eyed Kids up.
Okay.
You want me to go first?
Of course.
I'm gonna give it a 3.5 out of 5.
I'm right there with you.
I really enjoyed it. And it's the comeback issue, so I was expecting it to be a little bit slower.
Yeah.
And it kind of was, but a lot of stuff did happen to move the story forward. Mm-hmm. I just want to see like when all the threads are going to combine together, you know? Because we've had Meredith and Gus separate from the rest of the family. Now we've got Reese coming in, who was separate and came in, you know, whatever, like 10 issues ago. So I want to see all these threads tying in together. And then putting like a joined front against the Black Eyed Kids.
Mm-hmm.
So cool. 3.5 out of 5 all around.
Yep.
We're in sync so far. Let's do Animosity: The Rise.
Okay.
Number 2.
Yeah.
Because I think Animosity 8 is really heavy, so I kind of want to do that last.
Okay.
So Animosity: The Rise number 2 is Marguerite Bennett writing, Juan Del on pencils and colors, Marshall Dillon on letters, and Juan Del's cover as well.
Yeah. I wasn't with you guys when you reviewed the first one.
Yeah.
So I read these back to back. So it's like all one story to me.
So all right, so tell me how that went then.
Which one? The first one?
Do it like reading them back to back. Because I didn't read the first one. I just went ahead and read this one.
Yeah. It all read as one story to me. I mean, it's not a whole – I mean, it's like they took the same event and we're just like – it feels like Fear the Walking Dead of Walking Dead.
I was thinking the same thing, yeah.
It's like the same event, different characters, different situations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting though the way this one develops compared to the main storyline though.
So I know that the main book has gotten like really dark really fast. But it seems like even this issue, which takes place like a week after the wake, right? Is a lot darker than what we got like in the first couple issues of the main book. Because you had that big jump in time from the first issue to the second issue, where we didn't see any of the stuff that happens after the wake, right? Like the issue opens up the day of the wake or right before the wake, and then by the end of the issue, you skip forward what was like a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
And so the wake is the story that is used to kind of tell the story of that missing year. And to be honest, I kind of expected this to be more than an issue because the wake was supposed to be one issue and now they put this one out. I think there's a third one that's announced.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be more in the future. There just seems like so much story in this world, you know what I mean? And as long as Marguerite wants to write it, like I'm totally for that. I really think that's really interesting.
Well, What was weird to me is that this one doesn't feel that much about the wake either. I feel like they skipped the wake. I feel like there was more about the wake in the main title than this one. This seems to be about the guy and the bat that's watching over him. Yep. What's the guy's main character's name? The guy?
Oh, God. Was it Alan or something? Adam.
Yeah, whatever. Some generic name. He looks like a regular dude.
Yeah. The veterinarian.
Yeah.
Yep.
But all the animals are really well organized through the majority of this story, and they're trying to create sort of like a civilization.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of oppressive by one perspective. But that doesn't seem to me like the wake. That seems like after the wake, after they have had time to kind of find themselves and organize. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Because they are really well organized, but some of the things they reference do happen early on in the wake. Because like they haven't done the the sterilization process for animals and people yet, but they talk about that here. They're still rationing food because they haven't figured out like how to feed the animals and the people at the same time. There's a whole lot of stuff that is mentioned in the main book right. early on. That it's just now happening here or hasn't happened yet.
Right.
So I think that's where it places it early on in the timeline. But you're right. It's not immediately after the wake.
Yeah,
it's
I guess
it's been some time.
I guess I was expecting it to be sort of like the – remember the first issue or two of Animosity where it was like all those cool panels of the animals
mm-hmm.
rising? And we were kind of like geeking out a little bit about like that was the cool part of it.
Yep.
Analyzing – you know, the symbolism and whatnot behind that.
Yep.
I thought it was going to be more that sort of stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, like I said, it still happens pretty early on.
Yeah.
So there's a whole lot that they could do. And because it's closer to the events of the wake, I mean, it seems like with Adam, they could do a little more flashback story mm-hmm. to get some of that information.
Yeah,
because I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff that gets mentioned here that we hadn't heard before. Like all the dolphins are like guarding the coast, and they don't let anyone leave.
Yeah,
and they're destroying all the Navy ships and all that stuff. That's really interesting.
Yeah, they're pretty vicious.
Yeah, they're like super vicious. Which I everything that I know about dolphins.
Yeah, you like, expect
I've never
the opposite,
expect
right?
That, yeah. You know, like they always help. They've helped people that get attacked by sharks, and you know,
yeah.
Whales do the same thing. Like if a killer whale or a great shark like attacks an animal, they'll try to help them. So I assume that they would want to help, but they're keeping everybody on land. And you know what? Now that I think about it, that might be their way of helping. To be honest, because the world. After the wake is so messed up that maybe they don't want that spreading to the sea.
Yeah.
Because surely like fish and stuff are sentient as well by this point, right? I mean, if the dolphins are, I would assume that everything else in the sea is.
Yeah. Well, we've seen other animals.
Yeah, yeah.
Sea creatures.
Yep.
And now you're referencing issue one, I think, but somebody rescued the people from the dolphins. I don't remember which animal it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
I have vague memories of that, yeah. It doesn't matter. You do get quite a bit about how this new society is getting structured. And it's very different than what we're seeing in the main title, too.
Yeah.
Because even though the animals are in charge there, it seems a little more open in terms of, you know, letting different animals and people coexist.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in this building that they're holed up in, Wintermute, which I believe is a wolf, right?
Is it a fox or a wolf?
Yeah, I couldn't tell. It was either a fox or a wolf
yeah.
of some kind. It looked a little large to be a fox, but maybe mm-hmm. it is. Wintermute's the leader, and she
She.
Yes. Okay, good. She set up the society that's a little more socialist than what we're seeing elsewhere.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird because, well, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I mean, we haven't talked through the issue, but the world she sets up, to me, when I'm reading it, it sounds like this sounds better than what's going on in the rest of the world. That's what I was thinking. But a lot of the animals seem to view it as a little bit oppressive.
Yeah. A lot of the animals don't like it. And I couldn't understand that. Again, we don't know much about how the society's set up or much about Wintermute. But, I mean, I like what I hear.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, there are animals that don't like it. And even we find later on in the book that the bat is kind of working with a resistance.
Right.
To go against Wintermute. And the bat wants to enlist Adam's help. But I mean, like, everybody's kind of kept in check. And maybe it is a little militaristic in some way. Because every human that lives in this place has a job, right? And they're all assigned an animal protector. Mm-hmm. So they can't go anywhere without their animal protector. But the animals maybe feel like they're caged as well. Because they're not allowed to leave this building.
Right.
Right? Unless they're going to go forage for food or whatever. But I think the reason they're in this place is there's already stores of supplies, medical and food, where they can stay here for quite a while. So, like, really, they can't leave. And maybe that's why they feel like this is not the best place for them. Although Adam seems to not mind it.
I can't get a read on Adam. He seems like he's just like, hey, I'm going to go with whatever, you know. He doesn't seem to have an opinion yet. He's just going with whatever the animal is that's sort of putting their thumb on him at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think the weird thing to me is like Wintermute. I always want to compare this to Walking Dead. This feels like The Walking Dead, but with animals instead of zombies. But Wintermute hasn't been portrayed as like the governor in The Walking Dead or like Negan, mm-hmm. where there's clearly something off. Or they're doing bad stuff, or they're trying to profit, you know, live large while everybody else is starving or whatever. Mm-hmm. She's been portrayed as she's really trying to balance rations and make sure everybody gets enough food and really take a bad situation and turn it into something that's least equal, mm-hmm. which makes it a little bit confusing for me.
Yeah.
Because that makes me not understand why these people are so dead set on like rebelling against Wintermute. And she doesn't even seem that oppressive, to be honest.
Right. No, she doesn't. She seems like pretty straightforward.
Right. Maybe that changes in the next issue.
I guess that's possible. I mean, is the next issue going to continue from this point of the story?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know. I kind of like Wintermute. There's some interesting callbacks to other things, though. So, like, at the beginning of the book, Adam is – he's just like, I want to read my book. Can you get me my book?
Yeah.
And the bat's like, it's not your book. It's everybody's book. So I'll see if, you know, we can get it out of the communal goods. But the book he wants is The Giver. And I don't know if you've read that or have you seen the movie?
I don't think so.
So it's set in the future. And it's this oppressive society where nobody has memories or emotions. Like they take medication to stop all that.
Right. Is this a movie about this?
Yeah, there is a movie.
Okay.
And so nobody has memories except one person, okay, the Giver. And the Giver stores the entire society's memories. And everybody's assigned a job when they reach a certain age. And that one kid is assigned to be the next giver, but until he gets all the information, he's, I think they call him like the receiver or something. It might be some different name. So he has to train with the giver to gain all these memories. And so you find out like the whole background of how people got to this place, and why they don't have memories of anything prior, why they don't have emotions. Like, there's a whole backstory to it. And it's really interesting. And I found it interesting that that would be the book that he wants to read in this place.
Right.
And I mean, judging by the stuff that we're seeing in the main book, I'm sure it's not like Marguerite's like, oh yeah, The Giver's a great book, let me just throw that in here. Like, there's going to be some symbolism, right?
Sure.
So, yeah. Anyway, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it's just weird because there has been no clue of Wintermute doing anything mischievous like that, or you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like anybody's there that oppressively.
No, you're right. I mean, other than the fact that they can't leave, right?
Yeah, maybe there's something we don't know.
Yeah, there's got to be a little bit more. They're holed up in it's got to be a mall, right?
Is it? I don't know. This is the Lewis building.
Because there's like a grocery store in here. Or maybe that's just stuff that they collected during the harvest.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly. There's not a good page where it shows exactly like from the exterior or anything. Mm-hmm. And I was picturing it as sort of like a city, like where there's high rises and connected buildings, and some of the frames you do see like them sitting in front of a window and a lot of high rises in the distance.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, imagined like connected buildings with overground, like over street tunnels and stuff or whatever.
Sure.
But who knows?
Sure. Now that I'm looking over it again, there is that one scene where Wintermute finds that marsupial stealing food. You know what I'm talking about?
The little
critter
ferret-looking.
Yeah, the little ferret thing. And she's like, we're under martial law, not marsupial law. She's like, I hate doing this, but blah, 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 blah. Like, people that are... anyone that steals food has to be taken care of, so nobody has an incentive to eat you. So pretty much like that marsupial is done, right? Because she's got...
Yeah, she does. Stealing will be punished by death.
Yeah. Looks like there may be a panther and I don't know what these other animals are. Mm-hmm. Maybe a coyote or something.
I guess that's your one villainous action by Wintermute.
Sure. What about the sterilization and all that? Are you cool with that?
Wow, it makes sense. In their predicament.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I mean, I don't know. It's desperate times, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Desperate measures.
You are right.
It's a typical situation, like in the 100, for example, when somebody commits a crime. They're in such a shortage of supplies that they can't bury bodies. So what do? They like just kick people off the ship and that kills them.
Right.
And it seems like inhumane from our perspective because we live on this lush planet with lots of space and, you know, these huge corporate penitentiary buildings we can throw people in. But in their situation, there's some practical logic behind those measures. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's sort of like until you're in that situation and may have to make that decision,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to make, you know, as much sense in your perspective, in any other perspective.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I guess so.
So that's why it's hard for me to get a read on Wintermute.
Well, it's hard to get a read on a lot of these characters, and that's what I really enjoyed about the issue. Because even the bat, like, you know, the whole time the bat's dealing with Adam, the bat seems kind of like a dick, you know?
Yeah.
And then we find out that it's kind of all a ruse.
He's profiling or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, he disables the cameras and microphones because all the rooms are bugged. He's like, you know, that's all an act for Wintermute. Like, if you want to help us, I'll give you some information. He's like, I'm going to turn the cameras back on. Don't act weird, but, you know, just follow my lead. And that's when Adam gets that letter from, I guess, the quote-unquote resistance. And I tried to read it. It wasn't, like, anything super interesting, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, like, it says, you know, we've been watching you. It reminded me of The Matrix. You know when Neo, like, goes to look for Morpheus?
Yeah.
It was, like, that kind of note.
Yeah.
We've
referenced, four different TV shows or movies in this one issue.
No kidding. So, yeah, really, really interesting. I'm going to let you go first on this one. What's your rating?
I guess a 3. I don't want to give it higher than – I mean, I enjoyed it. I'm confused, and I'm also a little bit confused. If it's not going to be a long running, I'm curious how they can make a lot of sense out of these two issues and, like, one or two more issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to give it more than – Black Eyed Kid, so I'll do a 3.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of okay for me.
I'm gonna go a little bit higher. I really enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy it as much as the main title, and we'll get to that in a second. So I'm gonna go with a 3.5 on this one too. 3.5 out of 5.
Cool.
I guess Animosity number 8.
Mm.
Woof. Heavy.
Yeah.
I was really taken aback when I read this issue. Because it started off like most other Animosity books have in the last couple of issues.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the entire animal crew and Jesse and Sandor and all that. You have their interaction. And then you have all these other animals. But then when we get to, what was it, like an aardvark?
Mm-hmm. Looks like it.
That's when things get really deep. Like, I would say 75% of this issue is a talk about the purpose of life on the planet.
Right.
And how that relates to God and the universe.
Yeah.
Does that kind of sum it up?
I think so. And it makes me wonder if Marguerite's trying to... She's got some, like, hidden message behind this. Maybe not, like, a religious message. Like, she's not trying to secretly, subliminally, like, make a Scientologist or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one seemed like it – like, the Rise had a little bit of a political message. I don't know. It seems like there's maybe something ideological that's maybe influencing these.
So normally I would say, yes, you're right. However, I think I don't think this is hidden in this book. I think it's pretty blatant.
Okay.
Good point. That there's a message that she's trying to get out.
Yeah.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You know? And yes, right. The aardvark is used as kind of like the method of revealing that message.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily a bad message, even though it does kind of seem bleak.
Mm-hmm.
But we get a lot of different takes on the soul and like how different religions view the soul. And these animals are trying to determine if they have a soul or not based on these different beliefs. And while it seems a little deep and far-fetched, at the same time, like, if I was an animal and all of a sudden I could talk and have all these weird, like, conscious thoughts and, you know, like, morality that I have to think about. Like, this is a shitty world, right?
Yeah.
So you have to make some very different choices in order to survive here. That's one reason why I love a lot, not all, but a lot of zombie movies and TV shows, they do a good job at just that kind of thing, right? Playing with morality. And I always say, like, really good zombie movies and TV shows aren't about zombies. They're about the relationship between people. and how those relationships change when you're faced with, I guess, the end of the world, technically.
Right. When the, like, safeguards and structures in society have been, like, taken away.
Right.
Then, like, then how do you really respond?
Right. How do you act? Right. Because we've, we've got laws and we've got, you know, moral values and things like that. But, like, that's all projected on us by society, right?
Yeah.
Well, what happens if that breaks down and there's nobody to enforce those laws and moral values? Like, are you still that person? Or do you go on and do your own thing?
Right.
And, you know, God, man, I was like, what did I just read? You know what I mean? And, like, not in a bad way, but, like, there's certain things that I expect to be done in a comic book, right? And while I expect some books to do what Marguerite did in this issue, I didn't expect it from this book.
From this one.
This early on.
Yeah.
Right? But at the same time, it makes total sense. Like, yeah, these animals are going to have these conversations because now they're thinking on a much higher level.
Sure.
So I didn't mind it as much. But I know some people are going to absolutely hate this book because of all the religious talk.
Yeah.
All the philosophical conversations that the animals have. And I think that's fine. I mean, and to be honest, I think people that maybe don't like that kind of stuff are probably not reading this book anyway.
Yeah. So one thing that's a little bit weird to me, and it's sort of been this way since I first started reading this, just trying to really make sense out of this in the context of animals. But if they just gain consciousness now and could start thinking about these things, wouldn't their thinking be more primitive? It's not like humans evolved and then immediately we were talking about the things they're talking about. Religion even was really primitive thousands of years ago, and it evolves throughout time. But these animals are talking about sort of modern stuff. So it's like, where did that come from? Is there a level of did they gain this from their the humans around them somehow when they were not conscious?
Well, it seems like the wake kind of put everyone on the same intellectual level. You know what I mean? And by that, I mean, like, capable of the same type of thought. Because, I mean, with people now, there's some pretty dumb, ignorant people, right? And there's some really smart, brilliant, educated people. You have the whole gamut. But regardless of where you are intellectually, like, all those people have the same possibility of the same kind of thought. And I feel like maybe the animals are kind of the same way. Right, because we've seen some pretty dumb animals, right? Like the pandas just go and shoot themselves, and now you've got this aardvark who's like, you know, having a really deep philosophical conversation with some really existential topics,
right?
That some of the other animals maybe haven't seen. And then when he brings them up, they're like, "Oh yeah, well, you know, like the soul and this and that religion and that."
But when did the aardvark get so educated on this? Is what I mean. It's like our understanding of this stuff is stuff we learn from our parents and our peers, which they learn from their parents and their peers.
Sure.
And it's been a long process. So I'm like, how did this aardvark just wake up and all of a sudden, wow, I got this vast amount of, you know, philosophical understanding?
Well, I mean, I don't think you need to, like, study to have philosophical understanding, right? If you're really adept at looking at the world around you, that's generally enough for you to come up with some kind of philosophy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Have you read Jason Aaron, The Goddamned?
I have.
That's – so we're talking about two different comics now, so I guess it's not a good point anymore. But that's what I think of primitive. Like those – they're just like – it's they're clearly not on the same intellectual level that like we are today, the way he writes that book. Right. And that's one of the things I liked about this. Whereas these, I don't know. My issue with this book has always been it's just a little bit too random. It's just let's take some animals and throw them and just all of a sudden make them humans. And I have a hard time understanding how we got there and reading the pages and seeing the things they're doing and buying into it. Which I know it sounds ridiculous because we're talking about a fictional comic book.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I mean, of all the stuff that we read, what makes one thing more plausible than another? You know what I mean?
Yeah, because, like, the Goddamned, I read it, and in my head, I'm like, okay, you know what? This makes sense to me because at that time, you know, the stories we hear sound very modern, but the reality is, you know, 5,000 years ago, these people would have been barbaric and ignorant and just stupid the way they're portrayed in that book.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, I'm on a tangent.
I see what you're saying, but at the same time, like, there's a whole different understanding of how the world works today.
Right.
And it just seemed like, I mean, the animals picked a lot of that stuff from whoever they were with, right? So we meet this goat in this issue, who like speaks with kind of like a Mexican accent, mm-hmm. because she was raised by Mexican immigrants, like on a farm. And so the goat's reality is very different than this aardvark.
Right.
Or, you know, even the cat. Like, the cat was a good example because the cat is talking about how I think she was involved in some experiments.
Yeah.
But even through all that, like, she never blamed her humans for
right.
her situation. You know what I mean? And so different animals are reacting differently based on whatever situation they came from. And it's the same thing with the people, you know? Like, we don't know a whole lot about Adam that mm-hmm. we talked about on The Rise, but... like, he kind of seems very aloof. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so there's got to be some trauma there that makes him act that way.
Yeah.
Just like that. I mean, that's the way that the animals are acting. And I get your point, but it seems like that is ultimately the point of this book. Is that, and I think I said it with the first issue, I compared it to like Animal Farm and things like that, where the animals are really just, you know, stereotypes for actual people. It just makes telling this kind of story, a hard-hitting story like this, maybe a little bit easier for readers to stomach because they're not people. They're animals.
Yeah.
Right?
And the aardvark's defense, he or she does talk about, like, the research she's done, reading the Quran at one point and right. then not finding answers and going to speak with somebody else mm-hmm. who was an expert in whatever.
Yep. Well, and people do that. I mean, I kind of yeah. went through that
right.
in my late teens, early 20s. So,
yeah.
I mean, I totally get that. Yeah, this issue was really, really interesting. It was like a left hook for me, man. I was like, what is happening?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very very interesting. Let's see, what else did I miss in here? That thing with the goat was freaking heart wrenching too.
Towards the end.
Yeah, yeah. When you get the story of the goat and her family and how, they went looking for food and shelter and there were radio signals being blasted about. An artificial food source that had been created by like a bunch of hipsters.
Mm-hmm.
And so they all went to this town to get the artificial food. And it was a trap by people. Like they were trapping animals and telling them there was this food supplement just so they can go here and they would just butcher them for food.
Yeah.
Like that was pretty hardcore too.
Right.
That was pretty hardcore.
And Jesse's sort of summary at the end was pretty interesting.
You mean the story about death?
About where she says, even if there is no heaven, even if there is no soul, when we die, everything we were crumbles away and it goes into everything that's still there.
Mm-hmm.
Where the wind blows, your brother is there. Talking about how energy is sort of recycled.
Yep. Yep. God, this book's so deep.
Yeah.
Who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thunk it? Yeah, really cool. And I guess maybe her and Sandor are going to have a talk about death, I would assume. Because she reveals to him that she knows that he's dying. You know, that she overheard her mom take him to the vet and all that before the wake.
Right.
And that's kind of where that whole spiel comes from.
Whew. Yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome. What a good issue. What a good issue. I'll go ahead and rate this one. I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5. And it only missed that half because I was so taken aback by what happened.
Yeah.
If this happens again, maybe I won't be and I could rate it a little bit higher. But
yeah,
it was freaking awesome. I loved it.
I'll say a 4.
Yeah.
I'll give it a 4, which is good for me because, you know, I haven't been the most I haven't been super big on this title.
Sure.
So giving it a 4 is pretty high grade for me. But yeah, it is super interesting, and I think it's going to be a one-shot sort of thing. There's no way other issues will be about this. But hopefully it ties into maybe what's going on with Sandor or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And right. What's Jesse's life going to be like post-Sandor?
Post-Sandor, yeah. And I'm curious if once Sandor dies, if we're going to have another flash-forward.
Yeah.
Right? I think that'll be interesting. I don't want too much flash forward because I'm really invested in this world. I'm very interested in it, and I want to know more about it. You know, and right. Doing a lot of fast forward, like the wake is fine in filling in some of that stuff, but it doesn't fill in her story.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's a completely different part of the world. So we'll see. All right, believe it or not, I'm an excellent multitasker.
Oh, no way.
And I read World Reader number 5 as we were chatting the whole time.
There's no... I don't believe it.
I did.
Because you were talking most of the time.
I was. That's how good a multitasker I am.
Well, then if you want to prove it, why don't you summarize the book?
Yeah, I'll summarize the book.
It's really like you could... This is not a very complex story. I mean, at least this one issue, so...
Sure. I don't remember the main character's name. What's her name?
Oh, I don't remember names. Yeah. I don't remember your name. I don't remember anybody's name. I don't remember faces.
I don't think they even say it in this issue. But anyway, so the main character that we've been following the whole time, the girl that can talk to the space ghosts, mm-hmm. and her psychic / love interest...
Yeah.
Get out of the planet from the previous issue, and they're going to go find the next planet. And it turns out that there is a ship orbiting this new planet. So they decide to land in this new planet, and there's explosions everywhere. And as it turns out, the entire mission has been a bunch of BS because people don't want to find out why these worlds are dying. They're the ones that are killing all these worlds to make them habitable for humanity.
Yeah.
And so a bunch of soldiers start going after them, and they find some aliens that are still alive, and she has to protect them. There's a whole lot of shooting, whole lot of people and aliens dying. The end. How's that?
That's you're a master podcast. You've been doing this way too long.
If
you could have just multitasked all that out. It's kind of cool. There's one scene where she gets in contact with the aliens and they hold up a piece of shrapnel or whatever from the explosion that's killing them, and it has
the American flag on it.
American flag on it, which they know who it is, and sure. Yeah. So it's sort of a do-si-do. Is that the right word? A little M. Night Shyamalan twist.
It is a little M. Night Shyamalan twist, which I liked.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I'm reading this, we're talking about animosity that got so grim so quickly. And, you know, like, not to say that this book has been lighthearted, because it does deal with, you know, aliens going extinct all over the universe. But at the same time, like, the way that it's handled in this issue... is really interesting because, like, even she compares it directly to, like, when Christopher Columbus came to America and wiped out all the Native Americans, right, to take over the land and the resources. Sure. That's really kind of what's happening here.
There's one scene where she's questioning, why are we doing this? And they tell her, it's like, can you reference a point in history when that it's ever happened and been – and people like live together happily ever after, and it never works out that way. One ends up destroying the other and taking over.
But what's interesting, though, is at the end, she comes upon the mysterious...
Yeah.
What we assume has been eating all the aliens the whole time.
Right.
And she's like, what do you want? And he's like, come and see. Like,
yeah.
What is she going to see? Who is this guy? Somehow I feel like I think the next issue is the last one, right? Six issues?
Is it?
I feel like the next issue is going to pull another 180.
Think so?
Yeah, yeah. Huh. I have a feeling there's going to be some deep stuff happening in that last issue.
Yeah, this twist was sort of like, it was sort of one of those where you read it and you're like, I should have figured this out like many issues ago. You know what I mean?
But could you though? I mean, there's been no indication that that's what was happening.
That totally makes sense though once it happens.
Sure. I mean, that explains why nobody wanted her at NASA.
Right.
Right? Because she's there to get information, and they don't give a shit about getting information. They want to colonize these worlds.
And it totally correlates with, like, you know, American history and really world history.
World history, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It didn't make it very personal because the American flag did come up a couple of times in here.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you were talking about Marguerite making political comments and animosity. I mean, like, this one's pretty blatant as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, also, like we were talking about Wintermute, it's sort of like, okay, if you were in the position of humans from Earth, and it was like, hey, either we do this or we all die, would you do it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe you would. It sounds like when you read this book, she's clearly the good guy. But if that was really the situation you were in, maybe you would do the same.
Sure, right. But, you know, it does touch upon some similar subjects as animosity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because she does want both peoples to coexist.
Right.
And obviously, the aliens don't want to get destroyed. But, you know, there is a way that humans can live in these worlds and coexist peacefully with the people that were already there. The problem is we're not very good at that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they don't really give you any inclination that they even tried to understand these alien races before they did this. They're just making an assumption that, okay, it's not going to work, so let's kill them and take their world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, somebody must want to know because she's on this mission for that reason.
Yeah. No. Yeah. That's why she's there, apparently.
Yep. Yeah. Really interesting, man.
Now, does her, I guess her supervisor or whoever it was that didn't like her, now it brings into question, they made you think they didn't like her because they thought she was just kind of crazy and they didn't believe in her gift or power, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe the reason they didn't like her is because she had the ability to see through their mission.
Yes. You're right. It's very possible.
And maybe that'll get sorted out in issue 6.
Mm-hmm. Boy, oh boy. Let me tell you, if you feel like some of the Aftershock books maybe lack some depth, you obviously haven't been reading lately.
Yeah.
Man, oh man. And not just these books that have been coming out already, but even like all the new stuff, there's so many layers to all those stories, man. Good time to be reading Aftershock for sure.
Yeah, this is one that, I mean, if this would have came out 5 months, 5 or 6 months ago when we were talking about titles, I think it would have been higher up on my list. But it's like there's so much good stuff out now that it suffers a little bit, you know?
Yep, yep. No, I hear you. It does make it tough.
But it's still a really good story.
So rate this one up.
I guess I'll do a 3.5. Also, I want to give it higher, but with the other stuff that I know is out there that I really love, I can't do a 4. So I'm going to say 3.5. It's a good story. it's not like mind. I think I've said this the last time we talked about it, but it's sort of, it's not mind blowing. It's sort of like like what I said before. I read it and then I'm like, oh, I should figure that out. It makes a whole sort of obvious now. But but yeah, 3.5, little slightly above average.
I feel like I'm almost cheating the book, giving it a rating since I read it as I'm talking about other things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think a 3.5 is fair. Also, I'm gonna go with you on that. It's well done, good execution, and I did enjoy the little twist there. So,
yeah,
thumbs up. Man, some good stuff this week.
Yeah,
wee. I feel like I need to go read The Giver now.
Did you and Ronnie talk about Fujitsu?
We have not talked about Fujitsu.
What is that?
That's the new book that's coming out. I haven't read the solicit on it. But it looks interesting, odd. It's like an odd couple with superpowers.
It says the world's smartest boy and has been for the last 100 years. Wait, what? Fu is an unaging genius and has adventures around the globe and around the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, sounds weird.
Oh, Fu exiles himself to Antarctica to try to forget the painful breakup with his ex-girlfriend. Meanwhile, Wadlow returns from the future and sends James Dean, his ultimate assassin, to kill Fu at the South Pole. What the crap? The first paragraph sounded more interesting. This one sounds crazy.
Sounds awesome already. When's that coming out? August, right? July or August?
In shop September.
Fujitsu comes out in September, and Dark Arc comes out in September.
Yeah.
Man, the cover to that looks freaking amazing.
Looks creepy. It looks like some ominous press stuff.
The Fujitsu or the Dark Arc one?
Dark Arc.
Really?
No, you don't think so?
The A cover?
It looks like ominous, like a step up from Ominous Press.
I like Ominous Press.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. You must be looking at the B cover.
I'm looking at the main one on the website with the devil creature in the red sky.
Dude, it's a boat.
Huh?
It's a boat.
Oh, okay.
It's Noah's Ark.
Oh, right. I remember this one. We talked about this. Yeah.
Dude, this cover is freaking awesome.
Gotcha. It looks like a demon with horns and a big, cape or something around them.
Yep.
By that
you mean awesome, then yes. and then Phil Hester's doing the B cover, which looks cool as well.
Yeah. And this is Cullen Bunn, right? So I'm looking forward to this.
Yep, Cullen Bunn with art by Wondo. And then Fujitsu is Jay Nitz and Wes Sinclair.
Yeah. And what's
this is gonna be a fun ass book, man.
And so, what's the issue with Jimmy's Bastards? Is it coming out again or not?
You know, that's a good question.
It says July, so I guess it is
July. But there's not one solicited for September.
August. So August. Three. Yeah, there's one in August.
Yeah, but there's not one solicited for September. Is what I'm saying.
Right. So, is it a three? Three shot?
I don't think so. Oh, yeah. Man, I'm looking at these covers. Dude, I gotta tell you, you know what? Let's give him a round of applause. These covers are freaking awesome, man. I'm looking at the August solicits right now. That Ultras cover is freaking sweet.
That's another one that's been on hiatus. We need to get back to.
Yeah, the first arc finished, and then six August is when it comes back.
Yeah, I don't like
good stuff.
Oh, I see it, yeah.
Yep. God, a lot of good stuff. All right, I think that's it. We need to wrap it up.
Mm-hmm.
What, do we know what comes out next week? Did you do some homework?
No, I don't do homework.
Oh, God.
Let's see what's on sale. What is this? July? What month is it?
We're in July. I got it. So this week is Jimmy's Bastards number 2, Pestilence number 3, Insects number 12.
Meh.
Did You know, at some point we need to talk about insects.
Yeah.
Because we have yet to discuss one issue of this book.
Do we have to?
You know what? I'll get Jay or Dennis to come on and talk insects.
Oh, yeah. They love it, right?
I don't know about love it, but they do like it. So, yeah, big week again next week.
Yeah.
Will we get Jack and Ronnie to discuss insects on this podcast? Will all three of us show up on the next episode?
It's in our contract. We can't be on the same week.
Find out next week. We're an all new Aftershock Central. What do I got? I got nothing. We're on the Twitter machine. Go find us at Jack Sutherland, at Rambo316, at Geekvine, at Aftershock Pod. What's the email address? Aftershock.
Gosh, I didn't even know we had an email address.
There's an email. I don't know. Ronnie made one. You know what? Just email nerdlegion@gmail.com. That's easier.
Yep.
That's it. We're done. See you next week.
Ciao. Finish him.